What's in the Old Testament for us? Part 59. Song of Solomon, here we go. Also referred to as Song of Songs, or if you're a Catholic or non-believer, Canticles, I guess. They say, they, meaning the religious world out there, say that Song of Solomon is an Old Testament book consisting of a collection of love poems traditionally attributed to Solomon, but actually written much later. So it's called Song of Solomon, but they don't think that Solomon had anything to do with it. That's okay. But the name Solomon means is Jedidiah, which means beloved of the Lord. And we will not go through the details of Song of Solomon today because you already know a lot about it. Just kind of highlight some things. And for the folks out there on the website, there's a lot more notes on the website that we're going to talk about today. I'm still intrigued with Solomon because look at 1 Kings. Go to 1 Kings. Here's this guy that was just wise. Wise to the max. And 1 Kings chapter 4, for example, in verse 29, and God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all men. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Here's this guy that was just full of wisdom beyond, that had an enlarged heart or whatever that's, I forgot how that even goes already. What a guy. I mean, this guy had all of God's wisdom, given to him by God, of course. And Ecclesiastes chapter 2, if you haven't read Ecclesiastes chapter 2, especially you young folks again, the whole chapter is about how, the first half of the chapter, this guy had it all. I mean, this guy had it all. Verse 3, I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom. Verse 4, I made me great works, I builded me houses, planted me vineyards. Verse 5, I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees, all kinds of fruit. 6, had swimming pools all over the place. Wood, I got me servants and maidens. Guess I can make comments about servant and being hired to be a maid, but I suppose I better not. This guy's possessions of great and small cattle, verse 7, verse 8. He had all the stereos and cassette system that you needed. I mean, he could have music, any kind of a system he wanted. He had live singers in his house, delights of the sons of men, as musical instruments. I mean, he had all the music he wanted. He says in verse 9, I was great and increased more than all that were before me. And I mean, you go down to this thing, but this guy had it all. And I'll bet you that he looked good to people, too. He was probably somebody that people looked up to. Isn't that Mr. GQ? Mr. Gentleman's Quarrel. I mean, he was the man. He was Times Man of the Year, I'll bet. He would have been the Hero of the Year. Look at 1 Kings again, chapter 10. And this guy, this one single man, 1 Kings chapter 10. Probably never had to wash a sock in his life. Probably never had to fix a meal in his life. Probably never had to mow the lawn or anything, because he had all these people to do everything for him, which is everybody's goal today, is to be like Solomon, I suppose. 1 Kings 10:23. He exceeded all the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. Verse 24, all the earth sought to Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. Look at verse 26. Solomon gathered together chariots and horsemen, and he had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen. I just put down in my notes here, what a huge garage. Everybody's got to have their garage, you know, for their cars, and then they put all their stuff in the garage because they have so much stuff. Only in America, if we'd have jumped into this 20, 30 years ago, built storage units for America, because everybody's going to have so much stuff they can't keep it in their house, unless you just rent a storage. This is, now in Tri-Cities, you can rent, what do they call that? They call it, it's a garage. It's storage, but it also has outlets in it, electrical plugs, all that kind of stuff. So guys can go there and live in this garage. Like guys would if they had a tool set, tool kit, and a car was in there, their motorcycles and all their stuff, and they could rent that kind of a thing out. Well, that is ultimate storage facility. So he must have had a huge one. Look at verse 16. Verse 16. This guy was a good hunter, but he shot targets of gold. You know, and King Solomon made 200 targets of beaten gold. 600 shekels of gold went into one target. Now that target I can hit. That must be a big target. Anyway, look at verse 8, look at verse 21. All the King Solomon's drinking vessels were of gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold. None were of silver. He had his own navy in verse 22. In verse 18, look at the throne he made. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with the best gold. So underneath the gold was ivory. But who saw the ivory underneath the gold? But it was still there. Amazing. Look at First Kings chapter 1, First Kings chapter 10, verse 1. Queen of Sheba comes by. And when the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to prove him with hard questions. Now, he was still doing this in the name of the Lord. See, the God is still getting the glory. She came to Jerusalem with a great, very great train, camels, spices, much gold. And verse 2, she communed with him with all that was in her heart. Solomon told her all her questions. And look at verse 5, the last part of verse 5. She had seen so much and heard so much, there was no more spirit in her. She was sapped. This guy was something else. This guy was just, you know how it is, ladies, when your man shows up for the first time ever? You're just sapped. Oh, there's the guy. And you just crush. You fall. You melt. Right? Remember that? You smile. You remember those days?
Yeah. You know?
No, we don't say so, but you just know. You know, he's down in Oklahoma. You probably melted just because of the heat or something. Yeah,
when you're in second grade,
it sounds easy. Wow. You know it's the second grade?
We've only just first and second grade.
Oh. I'm learning more and more why, Lewis, you're so quiet. I learned to play piano in second grade. Anyway. So look at verse 13. And King Solomon gave unto the Queen of Sheba all her desire, whatsoever she asked, beside that which Solomon gave her of his royal bounty. And this guy was just the man. And yet, look at verse 11, chapter 11. Chapter 11. What's the first word in chapter 11, verse 1? But, I mean, all this marvelous stuff about this Solomon guy in verse 11, but King Solomon loved many strange women. Now, I thought this guy had it all together. I thought he had everything he needed, everything he wanted, and I thought this guy had more wisdom than anybody else in the whole entire world. And the whole world was going to this guy for wisdom. And what does he do? He goes out there and he marries 700 wives. Now that isn't enough. He's got 300 concubines. The wheat must have been really tall. Okay. And his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass in verse 4, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. And his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. And then it goes on and talks about what he had done. Look at Nehemiah chapter 13. Now, what does this have to do with Song of Solomon? Everything. Nehemiah chapter 13, verse 23. Glad you guys made it. We got your going away gifts for you. Now, we quit calling these things baby showers. We just call them going away parties. Is that all right? But we have 10 minutes running. Now, Rory, today is going to be a marvelous day. I mean, I cannot wait. Nehemiah 13, verse 23. In those days also I saw Jews that had married wives of Ashdod, of Ammon, and Moab, and their children spake half in the speech of Ashdod, and could not speak in the Jews' language, but according to the language of each people. So these people, they couldn't even talk to each other. And I contended with them, and cursed them, and smote certain of them, and plucked off their hair. That's what you do when you get an argument. Grab each other's hair and rip it, right? Isn't that what? And made them swear by God, saying, ye shall not give your daughters unto their sons, nor take your daughters unto your sons, or for yourselves. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? I mean, he did exactly what he was told not to do. And again, the guy had everything. The guy was full of wisdom. And he stepped up to the plate and he did what God told him not to do. Yet among many nations was there no king like him, who was beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, even him did outlandish women cause to sin. Even him. So guys, the moral of the story is, even the smartest. Never mind. Wonder if I made you why his wisdom in Proverbs 5, 6, and 7 isn't so good. What's Proverbs 5, 6, and 7? It's a warning. And he had 700 opportunities to experience Proverbs 5, 6, and 7. So I guess that's probably pretty true. 1 Kings 11, verse, let's see here, 5, 6, verse 6. Now still, what does this have to do with Song of Solomon? Everything. Verse 6, it says, and Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord. Isn't that amazing? Look at verse 9. The Lord was angry with Solomon, because his heart was turned from the Lord of God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice. I don't know how many people knew that. And then you go down to 14 to the end, and God set up some, stirred up adversaries. And Solomon didn't stand a chance. God set up his adversaries. It goes all the way to the end of that chapter where Solomon dies. And it doesn't say whether Solomon died in a good grace or a bad grace. It's with God. He's done. It's like he ruined the whole thing. So what does that got to do with Song of Solomon? Let's turn to Song of Solomon. Because amongst all this stuff that Solomon had done, 700 wives, 300 concubines, a couple plows and a couple heifers, I suppose, tractors and whatever, yet, we have this book called Song of Solomon. And apparently of the 700 wives, one of them must have really meant everything to him. The way he wrote this thing up to be. As also compared to when it was that he wrote it. Look at chapter 2. And look at verse 11. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land. The fig tree putteth forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grape give a good smell. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. So he had one out of the 700, apparently, that meant everything to him. I've got a lot of stuff. You like to watch me sweat on the Song of Solomon one, don't you? You just really do. I've got a lot of stuff written on it on the website for those that haven't been through it with us. But my dove, my undefiled, thou art all fair, my love, there is no spot in thee. I mean, he sees nothing wrong. There's just no spot in thee. She says the same thing back. This is just a relationship between a king and a queen. And yet we went, a number of years ago, we went beyond that and turned it into our studies for an example of a husband and a wife. And I know that none of us men have risen to the level of Solomon and his love towards his undefiled, spotless wife as such, but sure is an example for us to learn from and follow. And I don't know what else to say other than that. This is where you get how it should be. Now, her hair was as a flock of goats. Have you ever seen that, Dave? Having the goats around the house, you can say, honey, your hair looks just like all these other goats. Try it. See where it gets you. But this is what he says. Her teeth are like a flock of sheep, freshly washed. Her lips are like a thread of scarlet. Her speech was comely. Now this one, I know you guys like pomegranates, right? And isn't a pomegranate a fruit with a bunch of, just a bunch of little spots in there, a bunch of little seeds? And you got to tear this thing up. Do you eat the seeds or do you eat the stuff around the seeds? You eat this thing like an apple, huh? Eat the seeds? Not the good. Okay. Because it says... You got any pomegranates at home?
No.
Yeah. So those are little squirty little chunks of those, and that's what's good about a pomegranate? Can you buy pomegranates already pomegranated? In a little bag, or you just eat them like that, like sunflower seeds already squeezed? How many people must take to make those bags of sunflower seeds that are already open? And then chop on millions of them, and they spit the seeds out, spit the little thing into that little bag? Yeah, isn't that weird? Mark this, if you mark these at all. Okay. Anyway, he says her temples are like a piece of a pomegranate in her hair. So now, those of you that know what pomegranates are, well, how can that be? That's what she said. That's what he says. Her hair is like a piece of a pomegranate in her hair. What do you think? I don't know pomegranates. I have a hard enough time telling your wife that her hair looks like a flock of goats, but so it was then. And amazing. Now, the difficult thing about Song of Solomon, other than to talk about it publicly to people, certain verses in the chapter, is you're not always sure who's talking. And I remember reading that thinking, now is this him to her or her to him? Because he's talking to her about her, and all of a sudden, it's a him thing, but then it goes back to a her thing. So that's the hard thing about Song of Solomon. But that's okay, there's a king in this thing and there's a queen. Then you got this chorus of women, it's called the Daughters of Jerusalem, some other people in the background there, but you got yourself a bride, and technically, they probably figure that it's Abishag of Shunem, getting into 1 Kings chapter 2. He had to take care of her because if she didn't live through this thing, he'd lose all sorts of throne stuff, and there's a whole story, a whole soap opera behind how this was probably who it is. But interpretations of Song of Solomon, the Jews look at this thing as God and their nation, God and the Jews, because at one time they were his bride. So this is how he took care of them as Jews. And they still tend to think that. Then you've got the Christians who know that that's the bride of Christ, so this is how Jesus Christ would take care of his bride, and we are, from what we've read here, the bride. So this is how he looks to us with our relationship with him. And he sees us with no spot. Right? So that's another proof that there are no dogs in heaven. Mark that one too. That didn't work. Anyway. Then dangerously, we got into here are some of the things that we've talked about in Song of Solomon. Horses. I looked at LD on this one. And I pulled up all my notes that are on the website about horses again, and it's quite interesting. Horses are wonderful when they're willing and obedient. And remember, he says, I have compared all my love to a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariots. Then he says in chapter 7, verse 9, and the smell of thy nose, he likes to hear nose smells like apples. So then we got, by the way, the fault for this whole thing belongs to Dana. She's the one that gave me these points about a good horse. It is their purpose to serve their masters. They need to be led. They're not good leaders by themselves. Despite the domestication, they are thought to be beautiful. They retain a certain spirit of wildness even when they are tamed. They communicate in a very physical way. Their coats are sleek and shiny. They are warm. You have to handle horses in a specific way. To train a horse, it is best to cause them to want to do what you are going to ask of them rather than forcing them to, one step at a time. If you are consistent, fair, and firm, you can end up with a horse's will and its very heart. If you do not have the horse's respect, the horse will literally walk all over you. They're very social, they're a very complex social order. They need the presence of other horses. They look beautiful, have soft eyes and lots of hair. They move with grace and dignity. Their movement flows like a river. They symbolize freedom, youth, and tame wildness. They have great strength, but avoid using it with aggression. Most often they flee from conflict. They are a creature of habit and like the same routine. They are predictable. The horse's breath smells like apples. That's the one that just really threw me. And that's just amazing that he says this in Song of Solomon. They can be more destructive than the elephant. It will chew, paw, kick, or try to tear down something, and yet if it falls towards them, they will be surprised and startled. And yet maintain an innocent look. The horse, I don't know why I did that kind of a thing. And why not that happen? They will damage something out of spite and rebelliousness if not trained properly, even over food, and will hurt themselves in the process. I'm so mad at him, I'm going to have another hamburger. That's just a person, you know. The more tied down they are, the harder they fight and struggle. They're very curious about anything and everything. Their protection from dangerous flight, it runs. Then I got a bunch of verses. Horse is a vain thing for safety. Give not thy strength unto women. Some trust in chariots and some in horses. A whip for the horse and a bridle. And here we go there. He delights not in the strength of the horse. That is not delight in the strength of the horse. Be ye not as the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose mouth must be held in with bit and bridle. Bit and bridle. The whole land trembled at the sound of the neighing. So they even talk about neighing in Jeremiah. Anyway, it's amazing stuff. I am sweating like I have not sweated in a long time. But yet, I shouldn't mock that thing because that's very true. And people just take them so hard. Now, look at chapter 1. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 descriptions, very vivid, very personal descriptions of each other when they talk about each other. I'm going to just go down through all the parts and everything. The first one is 1 Corinthians, and I'm not going to read all these. Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 10. Thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels, thy neck with chains of gold. I think I can read this one safely, right? Yep, I can. We will make thee borders of gold with studs of silver. While the king sitteth at his table, my spikenard sent forth the smell thereof. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night betwixt my breasts. My beloved unto me is as a cluster of camphor in the vineyards of Engadi. That'll work. Right? Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes. If you go to chapter 4, verse 1. I mean, if you don't know what to say to your wife or to your husband, you can practice in here. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast, now y'all reading ahead, aren't you, to see if I'm going to I'm going to stop. Thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Mount Gilead. Thy teeth are like a flock of sheep that are even shorn, which come up from washing, where every one bear twins, and none is barren among them. Thy lips are like a thread of scarlet, and thy speech is comely. Thy temples are like a piece of pomegranate within thy locks. Thy neck is like the Tower of David. I just don't, you know, what's the Tower of David? Solid, strong, thick, I guess. Builder for an armory, whereon there hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men. That's the kind of neck? Honey, your neck just reminds me of the Iraq army. That's just look at verse 10. How fair is thy love, my sister, my spouse? How much better is thy love than wine? And the smell of thine ointments than all thy spices. Thy lips, O my spouse, drop as a honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue, and the smell of thy garments is like the smell of Lebanon. Honey, you smell like Walla Walla. Have you tried that one, Aldi? No, it's, you know. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. More description. This goes on. You go to chapter 5, verse 9. This is where she's describing him. You go to chapter 6, verse 4. There's another list. Again, the pomegranate and the sheep. You go to chapter 7, verse 1. Thy navel is like a round goblet. My belly is like an heap of wheat. I guess you could pick your crop. You know, corn. I don't know. when Moses has the power of Lebanon? Anyway, very personal descriptions. Look at, go back to chapter 1, verse 15. There's that word, dove. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different verses in here that talk about being a dove. Thou art fair, my love, behold, thou art fair, thou hast dove's eyes. In chapter 2, O my dove, thou art in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the stairs. Chapter 4, behold, thou art fair, my love, behold, thou art fair, thou hast dove's eyes. Chapter 5, it is the voice of my beloved that knocketh. His eyes are open to me, my sister, my love, my dove. His eyes are the eyes of doves by the rivers of waters. And in chapter 6, my love, my dove, my undefiled is but one. Look at chapter 3. I mean, the imagery, the figurative language, the way this stuff is written, is really, it's just an amazing thing to read. And what's the point? Who is Solomon? He had all this wisdom. He had all the riches. He'd done everything in the world a person could do. 700 wives, 300 concubines, and yet he loved somebody like he did right here. That's a different era, but it still wasn't. God still was not pleased with 700 wives. That was still not an okay thing in those days either. Look at chapter 3, verse 7. Chapter 3, verse 7. Behold his bed, which is Solomon's. 70 valiant men are about it, of the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords, being expert in war. I guess that's like having a gun at the side of your bed. But you had the whole army there. 60, right? 20, 40, 60. All had swords, expert in war. Every man has his sword upon his thigh because of fear in the night. And you watch some of our leaders. I wonder what it even cost for President Bush to go to Iraq, security-wise, and how they do this stuff. Or when he went to Jerusalem, of all places, how they had to, what it cost to protect him. That's what they did for Solomon. Quite a guy. Now, but here are the two things I liked about the Song of Solomon more than all that other personal private stuff. In fact, do you read Song of Solomon I guess I won't even say it, but there are a couple words in there that are extremely, extremely personal towards whether it's a man or a woman. And I guess I will say, you can get them on the notes if you want. But there's a couple references in there that talk about it have to be the man, talking about their private areas, and then also the same thing about a woman. I mean, this is really a personal book. It's almost like a private book when you read this. So you can find them on the notes or ask me later what those two words that I pick up on, especially on a man. It's quite interesting. Okay, but here are the other two things I find very interesting about Song of Solomon. And that's chapter 3, one of them. Well, that clock is going slow today. And these are two examples where the bride did not have her king. And chapter 3, verse 1. By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. Not there. I will rise now and go about the city, in the streets, and in the broad ways I will seek him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. The watchman I go about the city found me, to whom I said, Saw ye him whom my soul loveth? It was but a little that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her that conceived me. So there's one place where the king is not there, the man is not there, and she goes out there and she asks the watchman, the people in the city, and then it's not very long and she finds him. Now, that's the simple one. The one that I'm fascinated with, and I so wish women would understand this thing, or husbands with daughters, and or fathers with daughters, and husbands with wives that are working or whatever. Look at chapter 5. Same thing takes place here now. And in the verse 2, obviously 2 and 3 and 4, this is not having to do with a daughter, but the rest of the story would. but it would death has something to do with a wife. In verse 2, he says, or she says, I sleep, but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled, for my head is filled with dew and my locks with the drops of the night. Now, this is as close as I can get, but when he says, open to me, my sister, we should know what that means. Verse 3, and she says, I've put off my coat, which is Greek for I have a headache. How shall I put it on? I've washed my feet. How shall I defile them? Feet are washed, doesn't dare get out of bed because she'll touch the ground. That whole concept. My beloved put in his hand by the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him. I rose up to open to my beloved, and my hands chopped, dropped with myrrh, and my fingers with sweet-smelling myrrh upon the handles of the rock. Now she's ready. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone. See what's taking place here? Now, my soul failed when he spake. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. So you know what took place here. The big no is gone. Now here's what I want ladies to realize, and daughters, young girls, Olivia, and you girls, listen to this, and you dads, listen to this. The watchman that went about the city found me. She's looking for her man, her king. They smote me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls took away my veil from me. Every lady here should have a circle, a protection around them. Nobody goes into that little circle. You got a wall of protection, and you're going to get that as you get older. Right now, your dad's building for you. Supposed to. And that dad should keep the watchmen, the men of the city, the world, out of your little space, out of your circle. That's their job. Talks about that in Genesis as well. And here she goes out to this world, and the world out there, the watchmen that went about the city, found me. They smote me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls, they're supposed to be the protectors, right? The keepers of the walls. Look what they did to her. Took away my veil. Took down her wall, her protection. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him that I'm sick of love. She was so lovesick. And look what happened to her out in the world. It hurt her. And men need to respect the fact that ladies ought to have a space about them that we do not enter in our church right here. Whether they're 10 or 15 or 25 or 30 or 40 or 50 or 70 or 80, 84, whatever, they have a circle. And children, kids, we don't belong in that circle. And men, we don't belong in any other lady's circle in this church. We just don't. And we can become so familiar with each other and so church-wise that this is why I'm against church hugs, which we haven't done for years, which is fine. I'm just yakking this stuff up that wasn't planned here. But we don't need to be hugging other ladies in churches. That's a big thing in modern Christianity. Everybody's got to hug each other. Ah, how you doing there, baby? And they hug. And that's supposed to be a space there that we don't enter. And I challenge, and the boys and us men, we watch that. We respect that space that ladies have. And girls, as you grow up, you're going to take control of your space that your parents have created. If your parents haven't created a space for you, which they should, but if they haven't, you need to create yourself a space. Nobody comes into that territory there. And some ladies today are so feminine and are so comfortable with men and so comfortable with this world that they have no space and it doesn't bother them any. But a Christian lady, we're going to learn more about that today a little bit, that space needs to expand. People don't need to be in that space. Men, boys, don't need to be in that space. And this is what we have happened to this lady. She went out into the world, and the people who were supposed to be protectors actually took down her veil, destroyed her space, and got in there and hurt her. So I've never forgotten this piece right here. As we first did this years ago, this is the one part of the Solomon Song of Solomon that we need to just really heed. Men, you need to protect the space and the circle and around your wives. And we need to build a wall up there. And if they go out to this world, that world is going to tear down that wall. And all the things that we have our children do as they grow up in the schools, you know what they do in those schools? They tear down those veils. They tear down those walls. and our girls grow up in adulthood today, where they're even comfortable not having a wall or not having a space. They've been taught to live without that space and wall. So I'm just, this is a big thing to me, this story, this little section right in here, that my wife and my daughter and you church ladies, I mean, I got to do that here as far as the church goes, and some spaces are bigger than others. Some folks don't have much space because they're very comfortable with other guys in the community and town and the whole thing. You know, whatever. But look what happened to a lady that went out there. They took down that wall and they hurt her. I don't think ladies today realize how much they've been hurt. Because if you're very comfortable with a bunch of other guys, then you've been hurt. You just don't realize it. If your kids grow up and they're very comfortable around boys and guys and stuff, they're going to get hurt. And a parent needs to keep that circle, that space, as far away as possible when they're such fragile little human beings as our little girls are in this church right here. I mean, Scott, she needs to keep that circle like about 20 miles away. Men for Danica, Louis for Olivia, and the boys, you protect their circles too and that space out there. Seriously. Because look what happens to this lady that went out in that world and they took down her veil and they hurt her. But, and then she says in verse 9, so is that point made? I mean, that's a big point. Just a big point. I guess, think about it. I read in the paper the other day that puberty, whatever that word is down to 8 years old. Isn't that amazing? What's that? Yeah. How can we be surprised? Look at what we showed them on TV. Look at the movies you're showing. Look at all the innuendos that are in all these movies that our kids have seen. Look at what Disney has portrayed in Disney movies. And we don't even see it. Some of you know the actual subliminal stuff that was in them, and we kind of laugh about it, but they were put in there. Our kids have seen that stuff. And you know what TV and videos do to our girls? They tear down that wall. I tore down the wall to my daughter when she was younger. I tried to keep it as thick and as far apart as I possibly could, not knowing this, but nobody's going to even say hi to my daughter without permission. That was terrible. I mean, that's the way it should have been. But I didn't maintain it. Well, she's married now. I can't. She's not me to protect that wall. I would make her wall bigger if I could. So build the wall while you can. Amen? Amen? Don't you wish you could be in control of that wall again for your kids? It's a hard thing. And I know enough stuff. Here we go, Pastor Snoop again. I know enough stuff around here in our church family right now. I know enough stuff in our church family about our little children right now that I'm already scared for our little girls. I already know some stuff that's going on. And parents, you better open your eyes. Because there's stuff that's going on. You better get that space built. You better spread that space out. Because today, our little girls have already got stuff going on in their little minds. And we have already programmed them and taught them. And they're comfortable with it. They're comfortable around dirty jokes. They're comfortable around visual things, the sexual stuff on TV and the movies. They're comfortable around that stuff. Music will do that to you, too. There's that three-letter word involved in music. And we're making them immune to that stuff. What we're doing is we're tearing down their wall. And they finally get out to this world, because why should I say finally get out to this world? They're already in the world. You've already got television, videos, neighbors, relatives, magazines, kid books that actually attack that wall. Amen? I mean, it does. Our kids are under a huge attack. So, what do we do? Well, we know what happened when they get out in that city. Now, get back on track here, I guess. Verse 8, and they ask her, what is thy beloved more than another beloved? And I did a sermon a long time ago about Jesus Christ being our beloved. Why is he any better than anybody else's God, anybody else's Jesus? Well, she goes down and she listens. My beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000. His head, and she goes down the list. This is her man. This is her king. This is her beloved. And it's the fact I have a tract on it. What makes Jesus Christ of the King James Bible, as taught by Paul, more than any other beloved? Let me tell you. here's my list. Here's why he's better than anybody else's God or anybody else's Jesus. You know, that, you know, when we talk about Jesus Christ as taught by Paul and compared to him to what Peter says about Jesus Christ or John in the Gospels, man, it doesn't compare what Paul says about Christ. So our beloved is Jesus Christ through Paul. And then the same thing is right here. Now, the greatest thing about this whole thing in chapter 6, and that is in verse, the whole thing of chapter 6. She finds her beloved again. Whither is thy beloved gone, O thou fairest among women? Whither is thy beloved turned aside, that we may seek him with thee? My beloved has gone down into his garden, to the beds of spices, to feed in the gardens, and to gather lilies. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He feedeth among the lilies. Thou art beautiful, mother, my love, as tears are comely, as Jerusalem, terrible as an army with banners. Remember, she's been battered by the world, right? She was hurt. Remember all that in chapter 5 there? Thou art beautiful, O my love. Verse 5. Turn away thine eyes from me, as they have overcome me. Thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Gilead, thy teeth, etc., etc. Look at verse 9. My love, my dove, my undefiled, is but one. She is the only one. You know what he sees in her after she's been had by the world? Without spot. You see the importance of that thing? Jesus Christ looks at us, and we're out here in the world. You know what he sees? Without spot. So he looks at us as the bride, as such. There's our example towards each other. Without spot. That's how we should see each other, is without spot. That's how the example works. And she just got battered by the world. Anyway, a lot of stuff in Song of Solomon. Most of it I can't talk about. I just don't have it in me, I guess, but it's a marvelous thing. So we'll break for a couple minutes. Dads, be thinking about the space and the wall for your kids, husbands for your wives.